Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. We're underway with the finals for the boys, and we've just learned who's playing who for the girls in the finals. As usual, I'm one of your co-hosts, Nathan Seppi, joined by my other co-host, Jonty Ralph-Smith. Jonty, you know, back end of the season, some important games to be played. How was your weekend?
Weekend was really good. Started my weekend at Frankston. It was the under-17s girls showcase game, and I thought there were a lot of talent leaguers and players in general who were able to really showcase their weapons, the type of day it was. It was a really warm day, not like what you usually get down at Frankston, and yeah, there was a lot of impressive performances, and then on the Sunday got to see a boys doubleheader, so a couple of do-or-die clashes with Gippsland getting up against Dandenong and then Oakley being too good for Northern, so lots to unpack there. I know you had a big weekend yourself going out to Ballarat and you saw some good footy.
Yeah, a lot of football to dissect. We try and get as many places as we can, and we felt like we did it this week, and it was a good bit of football to watch, and finals are now shaping up, but we'll start, like you said at the top, with the Future Stars girls game on the weekend. So that showcased the under-17s for this year, and they'll be next year's draft crop. Tell me a bit about it, Jonty. We'll start with Sophie Mackay, best on ground, and she's been fantastic for the Sandy Dragons. Probably hasn't played that many games at talent league level to even give you an indication how good she is yet, and she played once at Vic Metro level and was arguably one of the best on ground that day. But tell me about her performance, and Ash Centra as well. Gippy, we know how good she's been for Vic Country. Those two Metro and Country staples, tell me a bit more about their performances.
Yeah, they were the two standouts on the day. I think Sophie Mackay has also played some really good school footy, and she's a Carlton father-daughter prospect. She runs all day, and that's what was really evident on this Sunday. So she finished with, or Saturday it was, she finished with 30 disposals and 6 clearances, and her ability to get out of traffic really easily was quite evident. It felt like she had even more than 6 clearances, but it was an impressive day because she got to so many contests and gave herself so many opportunities to get her hands on the ball, and certainly didn't fade as the game went on and opened up and opportunities sort of died down for some other players with fitness at that higher standard. She was one that was able to stay with them. So she was the clear standout when you look at a four-quarter performance. But I thought Ash Centra's best moments were probably better than anyone's on the day. Her first half was absolutely sensational. She had 13 disposals up until halftime, and she finished with 21, 6 marks, 6 tackles and 3 clearances. So we talk about her every week. It's another Ash Centra game, another Ash Centra clinic. She obviously dominated for Vic Country. The MVP is bottom major. She got best on ground in her local grand final a couple of weeks ago. Was rested last week, comes into this game really fresh, and came out of the block so strong. She got a couple of clearances in that first quarter. The way she absorbs pressure, there's so many things we talk about with her, and you could highlight almost every part of her game. But I think one thing that's impressive is she just absorbs pressure. She sees girls running towards her, and she'll just stop in her tracks. It's almost Scott Pendlebury-like what you see in the AFL, and just find a way to sidestep away out of trouble. And, yeah, that evasiveness is something that's going to hold her in really good stead. She's one that I think will be the most fun to watch next year. Certainly been a lot of fun to watch this year. So to think there's still upside to go with her is something that's really exciting for the Gippsland region and talent league in general.
Yeah, for sure. We'll touch on a couple more Metro players. Sienna Teller, 81, you know, for Oakley, that we've seen a lot of, and she's quite pivotal to their, especially their premiership run, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And Lulu Field for Western, we've seen quite a lot. Tell me a bit more about these Metro girls. How did they perform?
Yeah, so I'll start with Sienna Talaridi. She finished with only 11 disposals. It felt like she had a lot more of it than that, because when the ball was coming in for the opposition, it felt like she was getting her hands on it a lot. Her disposals often came through intercepts, intercept marks, intercept possessions, and then she was able to get a lot of good meterage for her team. So I thought she played a really important role. And yeah, you mentioned Lulu Field. It was good to see her play in a game of this standard, and she really rose to the occasion because I thought her moments were as good as anyone's. She's someone who has a really high game awareness and was able to 4 or 5 times really show that she is at the top end of what is being labelled, and rightly so, is probably a super draft next year. So 16 possessions is what she finished with.
And then a couple Dandenong girls. Let's touch on a couple, because obviously we know their bottom age talent keeps getting better and better by the year. Zoe yep. Bazanko, Gemma Reynolds, tell me a bit more about their games, how they perform, and yeah, we know the capabilities and the potential they hold.
Yeah, Gemma Reynolds was reasonable without absolutely standing out. Her cleanliness, again, was very evident. She finished with 14 and was quite good. She can play that forward role. She can run through the midfield as well. Zoe Bazanko was very good. One of the best forwards on the day, I thought. She didn't finish with a goal, but what she did is she provided a really important presence inside 50. She had the first shot of the game. It was a mark from 30 out, and she just missed it. But yeah, 14 disposals, 10 hit outs, and 5 tackles. So she rotated into the ruck, was going at stages against her teammate at Dandenong Stingrays level, Ali Simons. Ali probably didn't have her best day, but yeah, Bisanka was going against her, and that was something that was quite fun to watch. But she was certainly one whose follow-up and whose aerial ability inside 50 stood out.
And then the two Tasmanian girls, Lucy Thompson and Sophie Strom, we know they've been doing really well at talent league level, and they're that next, the next generation of those Tassie girls. How'd they go?
Yeah, so Sophie Strong's probably one we haven't given enough credit to on the podcast. So by virtue of that, I do want to touch on her. So 15 disposals, she was a late inclusion for this game with another Tasmanian pulling out. She looked really comfortable off half back coming off. I thought she was one whose efficiency was really good generally, which is really important for her. And she's confident. And what stands out with her is her athleticism. So she's really quick, and she was able to show that on the day. So she's coming in off the back of 3 or 4 really strong games for the Devils. I thought she performed really well for Tasmania in a game last week at Shepley Oval against Dandenong. So she's able to come in with some good form behind her and, yeah, play with a lot of comfortability at the level. Lucy Thompson, another one who probably could have kicked 3 or 4 goals, a little bit like what I was saying about Zoe Bisanko. She finished with 1 goal too, but, yeah, offered a lot of liveliness inside 50 for her team.
And then some country girls now. Sarah Howler, we know how good she's been at talent league level. I can only assume she transferred that into this game.
Yeah, she certainly did. 26 disposals, got first hands on it at a lot of stoppages. And then a couple of GWV girls as well. You mentioned, obviously, the country element of it, Nathan. So Claire Marnie kicked the match winner. She's obviously got composure, reads the ball really well. And, yeah, was able to sneak forward and kick a goal. She sealed it for her team, and it was really good. The other really interesting thing about the match is that we got the opportunity to see players stand up in the last 5 or 6 minutes of the match when it was quite close, because it did come down to a few acts late in the game, and her being able to slot a set shot from 30 was really important. And then Millie Lane was another one down back. We know how good she's been for the GWV Rebels. 11 disposals, 3 rebound 50s, and one who, yeah, again, was able to show how well she reads the ball. So that probably just about rounds us out. I guess if there was another one that's worth touching, it was probably Sierra Greaves. She finished with 24 and 7 tackles. So another one from the Western Jets. So I thought she showed a lot of desperation and clearly enjoyed the experience at the higher level, because she certainly played like she had that real hunger about her. And the 7 tackles was probably emblematic of the pressure that she was able to bring. And she played with a lot of IQ as well. So I thought it was a really impressive game overall for a lot of girls at talent league level, as we've touched on. But we'll move on now to the boys wildcard. So we obviously had a few games this week, and I'll start with the game you were at Ballarat, Nathan. This one was good in the first quarter from what I understand, and then Eastern was able to pretty much blow Calder out of the water. The final score 96-120 to Calder 5-11-41. Maybe if you want to start with a couple of tell us about the game first.
Yeah,
tell us how Eastern were able to break away.
Well, it was disappointing in terms of what it should have been, because, yeah, I mean, we look back 2 months ago and Calder actually beat Eastern by 40 points. So it's quite incredible to think what Eastern did. The first quarter, tough, contested. Calder were getting a bit more of the momentum through the corridor, and then sort of Eastern changed that up, stopped their ball movement, and were so dominant and really tough around the contest. And I think I messaged you after the game. They were 19-6, which is just so accurate. And at one point, I think they were 14-1, if I'm not mistaken, but they were definitely very accurate up to point. They only had 9 more scoring shots and won by 79 points. So it was just that's extremely dominant. It's such a shame for Calder to go out on that note, because such a, you know, talented, you know, promising young list. And obviously they'll have next year and to keep performing to their level, but they had such good moments. So it's a shame they don't make it through, because they weren't the highest loser.
They started the season so strongly, Calder. I think they won 5 of their first 7 games or something along those lines. Yeah. And just faded as the season went on. Perhaps, like you say, there is a little bit of reliance on some of those younger players, maybe a little bit of fatigue setting in. But a lot of those players have given themselves excellent platforms for next year, and it might be a really good year for Calder Cannon next year with some of that talent coming through, which we've touched on throughout the year. But I'll start with maybe a couple of Vic Metro representatives from the Eastern Rangers in Caleb Windsor and Riley Wetherill, who were both able to boost their stocks once again. how'd they go?
Yeah, wins are fantastic. And he was very limited in the first quarter by Jaden Ewan, who he had a great first quarter himself. He was just struggling to get his hands on the ball, but after quarter time, it just his impact was pivotal to why Easton were just so far on top. His movement around the footy, just his work rate as well was exceptional. Just those little efforts to chase that loose ball and put pressure on were just the things that stood out besides the normal things he does with his run and carry on the win and his movement inside 50. He was terrific and it just probably the second clear standout, I feel like. And I'll move to Riley Weatherill, who we've talked about in the last couple of weeks as well, that had a quieter Metro series, but I think he's been extremely good since Metro's finished. And I feel like there has been a lot of pressure on him to perform well, because if you don't do it at the champs level, then often you need to perform well on the back end of the season. But he kicked 4 goals and just really good body work and positioning inside 50. I mean, the ball movement inside 50 was just so well presented for them that they got every opportunity they could. And I thought someone who complimented him so well, and that I'd message you and I thought, I reckon this bloke is the most reliable player in the whole talent league, Isaac Tanzimat. I mean, he's been on the score sheet every time this year, but one game, which I can't remember which game that is, but 4 goals again this weekend. He's, you know, and he doesn't get the attention as well, because he hasn't been talked about as that, as a top draft prospect. So he's not getting the attention and he does it every week. So in terms of Easton going far this year, he's one that just keeps standing up, keeps doing his job. One, you love Christian Moraes, 2 goals, 27 touches, just really classy as well. One that helps win the momentum in that second quarter and move the ball forward and kick 2 really nice goals, actually, just really nice moving forward. And it's always good when you're a midfielder and you can get on the score sheet. And then Cooper Trembarth, like you mentioned before, he was really good. I thought he was super strong, held his ground really well. He's playing on the big ruck for Calder at full forward. So had a pretty tough job, but he was really good in the end. Great pressure and just took some good contested marks. So he was really good. And then the Calder perspective, it was their bottom ages that stood out. And there was a lot of bottom ages that were on show in this game, I feel like. But, Noah Scott, love what I've seen from him this year. I think he's got a big platform to work with next year. Amin Naeem was really good. Jaden Ewan, as usual. And then Pat Sedd gone on the scoreboard with 2 goals. And he's one that viewers on our social said that he will have a big finals campaign, which they only got 1 round, but still a good game nonetheless. So that's the wrap up from that one.
Yeah, so the Calder forwards and the Eastern forwards, I do want to touch back on Riley Weatherill, and it's probably been a bit of talk that he needs to stand up and show that he can be that focal point inside 50. And you talked about his body work, which I found really interesting. Do you feel like he was that real barometer for them inside 50? He obviously kicked the 4 goals. Was he that player that was able to really lift them to the win and put the team on his back, did you feel like?
Yeah, I thought that's one way to put it. He was definitely, again, with Tanzman, he was reliable. And it wasn't the body work necessarily like that contested one-on-one, but it was that body work to push off and make that space and something that was just so needed when they were struggling in transition, especially that first quarter Easton. It was pretty sloppy, the entries, and no real directive. And it was relying on the smalls to really pounce on a loose ball. And, I mean, Nick Watson didn't really have much impact on that game. And that's a great thing for Easton, I feel like, to take any reliance off him. I think he kicked 1 goal, but he was pretty quiet for most of it. And it was just the smart things for Weatherill. It was being a smart forward rather than just put it up in the air and let me have a go at it. Just making a lead. And it was great. It was good to watch. And he's been doing that the last couple of weeks.
Certainly, and when you think about the fact that Easton have Riley Weatherill, Isaac Tanzimat, like you say, Nick Watson, who you think at some stage in our series will have a big bag in him, Liam George has brought back in really good form at Caleb level. They've got a lot of avenues to goal, and obviously we've talked a lot about their midfield, so a lot of likeable traits to think they could get to prelim final week, or certainly win at least final. We'll move on to the Sandy Western game now. Sandy winning this one pretty comprehensively, as expected, 20-11-131 to Western 11-11-77. And again, a couple of players were able to kick some big bags in Archer May and Luke Lloyd. If you want to start with those, and how was Sandy able to get the ascendancy that they did get?
Yeah, well, it was a result we probably expected. The difference in depth was pretty big in the end. And Riley Sanders took the piss out there in the best way possible. It was just, he was insane. And Levi Ashcroft was really good. I mean, this game was killed off by halftime, really. But Yeah, Archer May, Luke Lloyd, the two big forwards that presented really well and did their job so well. Probably Archer May, he kicked four up to half time and didn't actually kick one for the second half, which didn't really need to. The game was iced by that point. But it's just really good. His contested work's been standing out, you know, week in, week out. And he pretty much nearly won the game off his boot last week in that last quarter for Sandy. But it was just a bit too inaccurate late. But he's showing he's got some big time attributes about him. He can do it when it's really needed. And Luke Lloyd's been really good as well. He's one that is a bit unexpected in that forward line to be as dominant as he is, but it was probably his work as well. He's pushing up the ground and he presents higher up and moves the ball forward. And then his work rate to get back inside 50 and kick a few goals. And he's been really good. So both ended with four and they've both been really terrific. And then you've got Kelcher Deer in that mix that had a bit of a quieter game, but we know he can present at times. So that was really, I mean, yeah, everyone was good for Sandy. In a type of win like that, you know, everyone's playing their role really, really well. I'll touch on a few Western boys. I'll start with the two 16-year-olds that got their inclusion this week, Tom Burden and, was it Tom Burden? Tom Burden. Yes, both of Toms. And Tom McGowan, they both got their first games on the weekend. Burden had played a better game. He was pretty good, did some really nice things in that first quarter as well. His vision inside 50, all the boys got around him after that, and it led to a goal in the end. Just some nice run and carry through the carrot corridor, which we saw at metro level earlier in the year that he possesses that, and then kicked a goal in the end. And Tom McGowan, a quieter game, struggled a little bit, but, you know, look, you can easily excuse that for a first game at, you know, as a 16-year-old, and he was quite small compared to some of the boys out there. So, you know, time to develop, time to grow. And then Jake Smith probably stood up, especially at times where Western were always, I wouldn't say they were in it, but they were always within that five-goal region for about the first three quarters, where it was always that one goal that makes the boys get up and then they'll concede the next one. But it was just sort of that player that kept standing up and clean out of the contest, showed his run and carry through the middle of the ground, and was good moving inside 50 and kicked a really nice goal as well in that second quarter. And then Logan Morris, the main man of that team, it was weird because he didn't play a quiet game, but it was just, and I think I said to you, the goals he was kicking were just not the usual goals he was used to kicking in terms of contested marking. I think he got two goals were from free kicks. One was a downfield, one was a hold on him, and then one off the ground late. So, like, they were just unusual goals, I guess, for Logan. But, look, he must be thrilled with the season he's had, and you'd be so surprised if he doesn't get picked up later in the season. So, Sandy moved through. Western, they are done for the year.
Yeah, absolutely. A really comprehensive wrap up there, Nathan. So yeah, good to see. Yeah, Logan Morris play some good footy as well, and hopefully Jake Smith, we see him on a VFL list at the very least next year. He obviously got that game for Williamstown. He's one I've enjoyed watching. He's that big bodied mid, and there's a couple of smaller bodies in that Western Jets engine room. So a big role that he played. We'll move on to some Sunday games now that I was at. And yeah, I'll start with the Gippsland Dandenong. Gippsland able to get over the top, 11-14-80 to 7-14-56. It was an interesting game, this one, because the scoreboard reads 24 points, but there was an intensity to it that until Gippsland kicked a goal with about 3 or 4 minutes to go, which was from a double 50-metre penalty because of some ill-discipline and Dandenong probably realising they could lose it. Until that point, it did just feel like one more Dandenong goal could bring two, which could bring three and could really bring about a really climactic finish. Unfortunately, we didn't quite get that. But, yeah, Gippsland probably won it in the first quarter in that Dandenong was unable to capitalise with the wind. Gippsland went in with the lead. Zane Dersmer actually found Willem Dersmer with about 20 seconds to go in the quarter, and Willem Dersmer was able to get one on transition out the back. So when Gippsland took the lead into quarter time, and then they had two of the next three quarters, obviously kicking with the wind, it was always going to be an uphill battle for Dandenong. But yeah, I will start with a couple of Dandenong boys that really impressed me. And I think the big story out of this game was Reak Andrew. So he's one who obviously missed the first part of the season with the long-term injury that he wasn't quite able to come back from until midway through. He was listed with Vic Country, didn't get a game in the national championships, but he turned it on for a 10-minute patch in the third quarter. And Dandenong was having to go for that third quarter. They were having to press offensively to get themselves back in the game. And to some degree, they did. They got themselves back within 2.5 goals. And he was one who ensured that when they were going and when they were running forward, you so often see that teams can then turn it over and then concede goals on turnover because they are running forward and they don't have any accountability out the back. He was one they put a lot of responsibility on to ensure he was the last man standing in defence and was able to repel some of those forward entries that were coming in quickly when they were turning it over. And he took 4 intercept marks in that 10-minute patch, also laid a big tackle. And he was credited overall with 7 marks, all of them being intercepts, the Dandenong Stingrays are saying, and 6 tackles. So a huge game from him overall. And he probably could have taken 11 or 12 because he was in the right position with Kobe Ship 3 or 4 times and let Kobe take the mark. But he was right there as well. So it would be great if we got to see him just one more time, see if he could back it up. Obviously, like we say, he had the delayed start to the season. Perhaps he's just hitting his straps now, obviously. A raw prospect and a lot of upside, a lot still to work on with him. But yeah, it's as well as I've seen him play. So it was good to see that from Reak Andrew. Kobe Ship, like I say, he was also really good from a Dandenong perspective, repelled a lot of Gippsland forward entries. Billy Wilson and Harry Dematty are both good as usual. And Cooper Simpson, I've talked a lot about this year. There's 2 things I want to bring up this week about Cooper Simpson. Obviously, we'll talk about his ability to be very defensively accountable, his physical. But one thing, I've watched Dandenong in each of the last 3 weeks. And in each of those weeks, I reckon he's got 2 shots. So I reckon 6 or 7 across the 3 weeks, 6 or 7 shots on goal where he presents when a teammate has a shot from 45, 50 metres out. And he's always on the move. He's always looking to receive it. Sometimes he receives it. Sometimes he doesn't. I reckon 6 or 7 times he has received it. And then they've got an easier shot at goal. So he's always thinking, he's always trying to get that easier shot for his team. And he's very aware. He's got a high IQ as a footballer. So that was something that stood out. And then also in the last 5 minutes of the game, he was one that didn't stop trying, didn't lose his discipline. So his body language, I thought, was really positive in what was clearly going to be a losing cause right at the end there. So yeah, I've really liked watching his season, and now that talent league career for him, I guess, comes to an end. But from a Dandenong perspective, yeah, it was probably those usuals that stood out along with Rhea.
And then Gippy, who was now, I mean, Lockie Smith is one as well that we've sort of talked about. How did he go? And yeah, big upset. This was the upset I caught as well. So I'm glad Gippy got through. But who's standing up for them? Because, like, this is a pretty big run for them, especially the knockoff Dandenong as well. Can they go further?
Yeah, so I'll start with Lockie. So Lockie Smith, yeah, 25 hitouts and 20 disposals. And we talk about the fact that he's got an uncanny way of getting his hands on the footy. And a lot of rucks do that through follow-up at stoppage, and they're able to use their big brutish frame. He's obviously got that big combative frame that allows him to get those disposals in that way. But what's also impressive is in transition, when they're moving the ball quickly, he's somehow always getting his hands on the footy as well. So he's always positioning himself in the corridor or in those dangerous positions. He knows where to be to ensure that he will get his hands on the footy. And yeah, he dominated the ruck contest. So really good game from him. And you talk about, can they go further? Can they cause some more upsets? I think being a country team, it's all starting to come together for them late in the season. We know they've obviously got a lot of talent, and it's, you know, 6 or 7 of those top-end guys, whether it be under-16 Vic country players last year or under-18 Vic country players this year. There's a lot of players of varying ages who are standing up and playing really well. And I think we're starting to really see that their top-end is really good. And their depth, it doesn't drop off as much as some of the other teams that we talk about. We've talked, I think, about Calder being a little bit reliant on a few players, a few of those bottom age players. The Gippsland doesn't really have a line that's particularly weak. They've got players on every line. So I think they are one that could sneakily find their way through to a prelim or a grand final. Based on what I saw on the weekend, it was quite impressive. But yeah, it's a good time to be a Gippslander, because they've also got Xavier Lindsay to come back. He didn't play on the weekend, and that gave the opportunity for some others around stoppage to really stand up after he's been the main man probably in there this season, or certainly the second half of this season. Lane Ward was probably the one, and to be fair, and Harry Scott, but Lane Ward was one who got 30 touches. He kicks on the run really well. It's obviously a difficult skill to execute. You often see players kick it off the side of their boot or on the instep when they're kicking on the run. But when he does burst away, he is able to hit his targets and he gets to a lot of contests. So that really stood out. And the probably best on ground from a Gippsland perspective was Chu Jath. So he's been talked about as that bolter this year. Obviously, the brother of Chunkworth Jath at Hawthorne. He finished with 29 disposals. He reads the game really well in defence and he provides a lot of drive out of the back half, makes really good decisions. So thought it was a really impressive game overall from Gippsland. Jasper Auger, another one who did some nice things, and Zane Dersma did what Zane Dersma does, 3 goals.
And we're talking a lot. Let's move through the two games we didn't see, but we'll talk about what we know about GWV Mario. I'll throw to you on this one. Rebels got up convincingly in this one, 17-19, 121 to 7-6, 48 for Murray. Just tell me a bit about that, Jonty. Who were the standouts for Rebels? I mean, yeah, convincing winners on the day.
Yeah, convincing winners. I think both clubs agree that it was a game where the GWV midfielders were able to really win it at the source, and that was what allowed them to get the ascendancy on the scoreboard. George Stevens led that 29 disposals. Some others that stood up. Lockie Charleston, 4 goals, 3. He gets to so many contests inside 50, which served him so well. So 38 shots on goal in the last 4 weeks. Jonty Fall, who's one you've talked a lot about in the last couple of weeks, getting into some really good form. He's leading really well, and his overhead marking has been really strong. Another that finished with 4 goals, 3. And then Harry Charleston and Flynn Penry, a couple of bottom ages who played really strong games off halfback and in the ruck, respectively. From a Murray perspective, there probably wasn't a lot of positives from this game and by the club's admission as well. Oscar Ryan's probably one who finished the year really strongly. He's gone through the midfield and obviously has that national combine invite. But probably, to be fair, it doesn't serve them a lot if they were to get those extra couple of games. The bottom ages might have got some more experience, but Phoenix Gothard's one that's faded late in the season. We already know what Connor O'Sullivan is capable of doing. Darcy Wilson as well, and Kobe James has shown a little bit, but probably hasn't been at his best lately either. So they probably don't lose a hell of a lot by not getting that extra game or two, whereas you look at Dandenong and someone like Reac Andrew would have really flourished with that extra game. But yeah, convincingly overall by the GWV Rebels.
And then I'll touch on the Geelong-Bendigo game. Geelong, I mean, this was the second week in a row these two teams played. Geelong got up pretty much in the similar margin as well, 12-7, 79 to 9, 761. And I'll touch on some Geelong boys that we haven't heard as much about so far, but River Stevens, father son of Anthony Stevens, who played for North Melbourne. He's kicked 3 goals in the last 2 weeks, and he's one that the Falcons are very big on, and what he's got and what he's going to offer in the future. But very good one-on-one, just protects the space really well, really clean, and just great pace inside forward 50. So he's just one that has slotted in really nicely to this Geelong team and taken pressure off Tom Anastasopoulos, who's had sort of up and down weeks, but he's played his role really well and really consistently. And yeah, the pressure's been on him in terms of who the defenders are looking to target. So you've got blokes like River Stevens who are kicking goals. They haven't got the attention on them. So a good avenue for Geelong. Xavier Ivicic been performing really well. These are bottom ages for the Falcons. And Tobin Murray's one that I know you've loved watching. And Geelong feel like he's very underrated still, and that he hasn't got the attention he should be. And he's performing really well lately. Just his work rate and his ability to compete one-on-one. He's been able to go forward, hit the scoreboard. Really fantastic. And then Joe Pike, we know, had a pretty poor championships in terms of what he could have offered, but he's been really good since the champs have ended, slotted in really well and worked on his craft, much more aggressive around the contest and in around the stoppages as well. He's been much better. So one to keep a watch out on there. And Bendigo, shame for their season to end so early. We know Harley, we thought, could have come back in, maybe have caused a bit of an upset, but wasn't to be for them. And Hugh Byrne got on the scoreboard, which was good to see. So some good signs for Bendigo, but we'll touch a bit more on them in a couple more episodes when we review a couple more of the teams. But we'll touch on the last game for the boys, and we'll move to the girls and then preview their finals. But Northern and Oakley, Jonty, this was the one that if there was to be an upset in terms of seedings, this was going to be it. And it was Oakley 18-15-123 defeated Northern 11-3-69. So Oakley were the lowest team to go through, and Northern become the highest ranked loser to go through. So they are not out of finals, Northern. But yeah, Oakley, take it away, Jonty. Big performance.
Yeah, so what won it for Oakley? I guess it was probably their top end talent really standing up, and Kynan Brown led that in the midfield. So 25 touches and 5 goals, 2. It's as dominant a midfield performance as I've seen all year. We know how slippery he is in the contest, and he was able to show that once again. Got involved in a lot of scores. It wasn't just the 5 goals, he was able to set up some other goals as well. So a really impressive game from him. And Billy Hicks was one who was able to really tear the game away from Northern in that second quarter. He kicked 3 goals. Didn't look like losing his one-on-one contest. So we know he's sort of faded after having that really strong first month of the season, probably averaging a couple of goals a game. But he put himself in the hot spot and was able to, yeah, beat his defender consistently. Finished with 4 goals. Finn O'Sullivan and Jagger Smith did what they have done every week. They remain ultra consistent for the Oakley Chargers. And just another I want to touch on, he finished with 6 marks and probably didn't have the game that he has in some others, but Charlie Richardson, so he's one who gets really high up the ground and offers them that true centre half forward position, offers them that target and can play as that link player, and he's a long straight kick as well. So we've talked a little bit about him, obviously had that strong under-17s game a couple of weeks ago and had my eye on him a little bit, really liked what I saw from him. From a Northern perspective, yeah, Christian Farinato was one in the first quarter when they were at their best that was performing really well, kicked a couple of goals early, including one from 50 that was really impressive. So we know you've talked about him a lot, Nathan. You're a massive fan of his, and he's one who's got that state combine invite. Alex Darrow gave him drive out of the back half and takes body contact well, puts his head over the footy and keeps his body well positioned. So I like the way he attacks ground balls. And then Lucas McInerney has assessed his options well coming forward. He finished with 21 disposals and is another one that played in that 17s game. So plenty of talent coming through from a Northern perspective, and hopefully we get to see him a couple more times if they're able to win through this week. But that will do our boys' wrap. We'll move on to the girls now. And Western went down to Calder in the first game, 7-13-55 to 4-2-26. So that ends Western season. They do play a repercharge game against the Sandy Dragons to give their girls one more game. But you know a little bit about this game, some of the Calder girls. How did they go?
Yeah, well, probably the first name to talk about is 16-year-old Shauna McAllegott. She's been really good up forward, and obviously 16-year-olds, not a lot of pressure on them. But she's been performing really well. I think she kicked 4 on the weekend, but just really great hands, a lean build, but, you know, working on a contest, work getting stronger week by week. Amy Gaylor has just really added something to this Calder Cannons team, which we knew she would when she had come back from her injury, and she played that last Metro game, and she's been terrific since she came back in, and that stoppage work she provides has just been really good. And we know how clean she is moving through the contest as well and moving through the corridor. She's been really terrific to watch lately. Sarah Grundon's just been continuing to improve week by week, and she's been really good. So it's a bit of a dangerous-looking Calder team moving into the finals, which we'll preview, but there's been some great sparks around the club. So interesting to see how they go. We'll move to the second game, Dandenong and Geelong. Dandenong got up 10-8-68 to 4-2-26 Geelong. I probably should preface it, these 17-year-old girls were not playing. So there was some of these results, I guess, were skewed a little bit, but most were the expected result anyway. But Jonty, tell me a little bit more about that game. And yeah, Sophie Butterworth performing again.
Yeah, Sophie Butterworth, 3 goals, 3, and Ambie Tregalis also scoring 3 goals. Geelong actually got the jump on Dandenong here. They scored 4 of the first 5 goals, and then Dandenong was able to come back and score the last 9. So Geelong dominated that first quarter. But you talk about, obviously, some of those top-end 17-year-olds being out, Sarah Halley being one of them, and that allowed Chloe Adams to really slot in and probably fill her place to some degree. We know she's had a really consistent season, probably flown under the radar a little bit. She had 38 disposals and a goal as that hard-working midfielder, so really impressive performance from her. Joe Sunderland, after impressing for Vic Country, had another good game, and then Michaela Williamson continues her consistent season as well. Gippsland beat Murray in the second of a doubleheader at Shepley Oval on the Saturday, 9-11-65 to 2-2-14. Alice Stoddart, we've talked a lot about, as that rebounding defender, had 28 disposals. So the double bottom major continues to impress. The story out of this game, though, was Abby Hobson. The Gippsland Power have been excited about her all season, and she's come in and had flashes, turned it on for a 10-minute period, obviously still got a lot of upside to go and probably hasn't hit her straps yet, obviously being that 2007 born and having a couple of years left in the system. But this was by far her most consistent game. She took a lot of contested marks and was able to be a real aerial presence inside 50, finishing with 11 marks and 4 goals, 3. So 4 of Gippsland's 9 goals. Obviously, the fact that Gippsland won and had more of the play helped her out as well. But she's one to keep an eye on. And I think as Gippsland improve in the next couple of years, as they will with some of the bottom majors have got coming through, she's one who'll spearhead that forward line. Jazz Soden backed up what she did last week, 23, 13 tackles and 2 goals. And then from a Murray perspective, Alice Voss and Kaylee Cobson, who both played for the Allies and Vic Country, respectively, in the national championships were the strongest players for them.
And then Bendigo and GWV, the Rebels got up 9-10-64 to 4-3-27. Probably a good note to add in terms of what this podcast always talks about, you know, the good community things, but GWV offered three of their players for Bendigo. So Bendigo had a full team because I think they only had 18, like you said, that were listed to play. So they were short. So very good on the Rebels to offer that to them. But the Rebels did get up in the end. And, yeah, Jonty, tell me a bit more. Tyler Crabtree, we know we've talked about, has just, you know, slowly gone under the radar and now built up, and she's put together a really good patch of form for the Rebels. But who else was impressive as well?
Yeah, so Tyler Crabtree's defensive work, like you talked about, others that impressed and were able to really turn the game for the Rebels late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, because Bendigo actually led at three-quarter time.
Yeah.
He piled on six goals in the last quarter. So Crabtree, Layla Lappin, who played that last game in the ruck for Vic Country, the national championship, she played really well, got to a lot of contests and was able to release her teammates really well. And Jess Wrench, she was a big reason why the game turned as well. She finished with three goals, and she's not probably a noted goal kicker, but she worked really hard and was able to show that, yeah, she's well documented, both without and also now with ball in hand. Obviously, she's got the athletic profile, but yeah, that caps from a Tyler Crabtree perspective. Obviously touched on her, an outstanding 3 months of footy for her. So it'll be interesting to see if she can carry it forward against Dandenong this weekend. We'll touch on that in a second. From Bendigo's point of view, it's also probably worth touching on, this was played a 16-a-side with both teams having players out with injury. Our local grand finals as well, don't want to decimate the local competitions. So 16-a-side, but yeah, Bendigo had Steph Demio, 27 disposals. Lila Keck got high and found different ways to be involved, finished with 26 disposals. Bridie O'Rourke obviously missed last week, came back and had 17 disposals. And Keely Fullerton, impressed with her running, her GPS numbers off the charts. She had 14 and two goals for Bendigo. But GWV did dominate that one, had triple the number of inside 50s, just had poor inside 50 efficiency, which really hurt them up until three-quarter time.
And then Northern and Sandringham on the weekend. Sandy, I mean, they did dominate this game in the end, 14-4-88. Northern either scored 44 or 50. I've seen two different scores on the Talent League app and Play HQ, so I'm actually not too sure what they scored. But either way, I'm going to go with 8-2-50. And look, Sandy, we got to be honest, they are unlucky to miss finals, and they are probably the fourth best team in that Metro Conference, and that result does sort of prove it, beating Northern. I know you're missing the 17s, but I still think if you add them, Sandy are the stronger team, and they built really well until the end of the season. Shame we'll only get to see him one more time in that game against Western. You were talking about that isn't for points, it's just to get them an extra game under their belt. But Daisy Flockhart's probably the main one that has performed really well in the last 2 weeks. She's a bottom major. She'll move into next year really well. 27 touches, 7 inside 50s. A few girls were a bit sick on the weekend and still perform really well. Her along with Mia Zielinski, bit sick, but performed really well. So good to hear. But yeah, her ability to, you know, hunt the ball inside the contest and just use her legs has been fantastic. Isabel Bacon generating a lot of interest and deservedly so with her pressure and her defensive sort of attributes. But it's been her, you know, offensive attributes have been building as well. The ability to attack and take the game on, especially, is something that's stood out a bit more, which has been terrific. Maddie Torpy was really good in that ruck contest against Lauren Jatzak. So it was good to see her perform well again. She was really good against Easton, moving back behind the ball and taking some good intercept marks, getting in the right spot. Cam Milius, Ruby Dell, both playing their roles really, really well. And as I mentioned before, Mia Zielinski with three goals. So yeah, building, you know, ended their season really well, and a shame we won't get to see them for another week.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just to finish off on the reviews, this one obviously highly billed, but missing a couple of their stars were Easton and Oakley, and Easton therefore able to get the job done, 11-7-73 to 3-6-24. Oakley probably more hurt by the players they were missing in terms of how they structure up. They're probably more reliant on those bottom majors that are at the top end. But just a bit of news from an Easton perspective. We mentioned it last week, but we weren't exactly sure on the severity, but Jacinta Hose has done her ACL on her other knee. So tragic news for her and for the whole Eastern Rangers outfit. But yeah, she only got to play about 1.5 games back. So hopefully she does still find her way onto an AFLW list, because she does have plenty to offer and is obviously going to be a development project. But hopefully it doesn't put clubs off too much, because it is in the other knee. It's not a matter of a repeat incident in one knee. But yeah, unfortunate news from an Eastern Rangers perspective. Taylor McMillan, though, on a brighter note, a 2007 born player. We were both at the game a couple of weeks ago where she was on the field. She had 19 disposals and it was another strong game from her. Hayley McLaughlin, Georgia Stubbs, and Grace Ballany all performed their roles well. From an Oakley perspective, Chloe Bowne, 2007 born player, their best 2007 born player, continues to perform. 23 disposals, a goal, and 7 tackles. And then Gemma Ragone and Maggie Marnie both played well as well, continued their seasons.
Well, yeah, that wraps up the girls' season in terms of home and away. I'll go through the ladders quickly to finish them off. So Eastern won the minor premiership by beating Oakley. So that game was for the minor premiership in the end. So Eastern take the number one seed in the Metro Conference. Oakley in second in the Metro Conference. Calder and Northern tied on 32 points, but Calder third on percentage. Sandy on 20 points and Western on 8. So that's the Metro Conference. Dandenong won the Vic Country Conference by 2 games on 40 points. Geelong and Tassie second and third, and the Rebels fourth on 20 points. Gippy, Bendigo and Murray all sit outside that finals contention. But now let's look ahead to the girls' quarterfinals and preview them in a bit of depth and give our tips. So we'll start with the two Metro games. So it's first v. fourth, second v. third for Metro and Country Conferences, and then the next week will be the top metro versus second country, and then vice versa. And that's how, so 3 weeks of girls' finals. Eastern v Northern, Port Melbourne, Saturday at 12:25 PM. I'll be at both these metro finals on the weekend. I don't think Northern just have the depth to compete, really. That's just the honest thoughts with this game. We know how powerful Eastern can be, and we saw it on Sunday. They beat an Oakley team, and we know they were losing players, but to do it that dominantly, Oakley is still talented. So, yeah, it probably, and Northern haven't been coming in with the best form, especially losing to a team who's not going to make finals, probably isn't the best way to go into finals. I'd have to say Eastern get this done pretty convincingly, and I'm saying 40 to 50 point win in this one.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. I think that Coach Ash Close has the most talented list at his disposal in the talent league. So,
yeah,
Eastern will get it done pretty convincingly just with that and that alone. We saw a couple of weeks ago, Eastern only really turned it on for a 10-minute patch against Sandringham, and that was enough to get the win. So you say that Northern are coming in off a loss to Sandringham, and I guess it's worth touching on the fact that Eastern were only probably a couple of minutes away. If the game goes an extra couple of minutes, they could easily be coming in off a loss to Sandringham as well, obviously, last week. But Sandringham are a strong team, so I don't think you can read too much into that, but I do think that, yeah, Eastern have just got too much talent on every line. They've got Grace Baba, who's accountable defensively. She'll be looking to bounce back. Was a little bit quiet this week in that 17s game. Gives them a lot of bounce out of the back line. In the midfield, Laura Stone just adds so, so much. So hopefully she's able to put a strong performance forward. And then in the forward line, they've got a lot of targets as well who are able to score goals. So I think that Eastern will be far too strong in this one.
Yes, well, and then we move to second v third in Metro, which is Oakley and Calder. Again, Port Melbourne, Saturday, this is the first game. There's actually three games at Port Melbourne on Saturday. This is at 10:15 AM. This will be, now I'm very like split now. I feel like Oakley should win this based off what we've seen, but I think you cannot underestimate Calder at the same time with the talent they have. It'll be really interesting, especially that midfield battle when you're chucking in Kaylee Cav, Amy Gaylor, Chloe Baker West, Jade McClay, you know, a couple 16s that have just performed so well. Amy Trindade as well. You know, you got Ali Spegan in that mix. There's some very good names in that Calder team that look, this is, if there's any upset this week, it would probably have to be this one. Now I probably would still lean towards Oakley because you just look at the depth and the talent. They've probably just got their system more together. And I think Calder, they've shown that at times. I think it's whether it will come together on the weekend. Yeah, I'm a bit split. As part of me just feels like this could somehow be the upset if Oakley do not turn up and, you know, if they think it's just going to happen, which I don't think they will. I'm going to say Oakley by about 2 goals. I think it'll be very close.
Yeah, I think this will be the biggest margin of games on the weekend. I think Oakley will get this done by about 10 goals I just think that you hear, there's the old saying that finals, and it's different at talent league level, obviously the talent golf can be a little bit different, but I think you hear the saying finals are won by your bottom 5 players, not your top 6 players. So even if 5 have, their top six players performing well. I think that Oakley's bottom end players are just too good, because I think Calder are too reliant on those top players to carry them. I don't think they have the depth below those players that you mentioned to play. Whereas I look at Oakley, I think you could name six or seven of those top end players that are born this year and next year. And then you look at someone like a Chloe Bowne from 2007, who has been performing week in, week out. And, you know, in some ways could probably be seen as being in that bottom five, because she's, you know, a little bit younger. It is later in the season, but she does just continue to perform. I also think Oakley have got the strongest system of any team in the town. And they've shown that for a number of weeks now, and they've rebounded from the break generally pretty well. Obviously, they had that disappointing loss on the weekend, but from all reports, they handled that break quite well. So I think that Oakley will be far too strong in this one and assert themselves as premiership favourites.
There you go. Big call on your own there. Dandenong and GWV on the Sunday. You'll be at this one. Double header at Shepley. This is the second game. This is first v fourth. Yeah, I think this will be pretty similar to Eastern Northern. I think this will be 10 goals plus. I think that, the gap's pretty big between Dandenong and the Rebels. So, I don't really think there's much more to say about it. It's just depth is going to be the big killer here.
Yeah, and GWV did go into this season with a smaller list, and they have lost some players recently to local grand finals, which has sort of hurt their continuity. Obviously, loaned some players to Bendigo on the weekend, which they should be congratulated for. But finding that best mix, again, will challenge their depth and challenge them, I think, a little bit compared to Dandenong, who have run so many players through their team and given girls opportunities. But that core 12 to 15 players is still the same and has been for a lot of this second half of the season. They've really gotten on a roll, and I think they've won six straight now. They were really good leading up to the community break. Looked like they lost a little bit of touch against Tassie a couple of weeks ago, but then was able to turn it on for the last quarter or so and was able to get the win. And then obviously on the weekend, they had that strong win. So Dandenong will be too good in this one.
And then the second game, Geelong v Tasmania. The first game at Shepley, 11 o'clock. This will be interesting. I think it will be pretty competitive. Tassie are actually the only team in the girls' comp that have come off like an extra week break, because they played their 13 a week before. So they didn't play last week. So I just wonder if that will play into their advantage or not. Geelong did beat them. I watched that game about a month ago where they did go to Tassie and beat them pretty convincingly in the end. And it was their transition work that was a bit stronger in the end, just some stronger bodies around the contest and up forward as well with Chantel Mason, who was doing really well up there and kicking a few goals. So I'll lean towards Geelong. Tassie can bring anything. So close game, but I'd have to say Geelong in this one.
And I would agree. I think Geelong will be far too strong. I think Tassie try to make it a scrap, and they have some players who are really good in that repeat stoppage type game. But I think if they were to try to play that game, then your Sarah Howleys and your Chloe Adams who have been really good, their strengths could come to the fore. And like you say, that transition work is something that Geelong do quite well. So I think the Falcons will be too strong.
Well, I swear it's about the third week in a row we've tipped the same girls' teams week in, week out. But the boys' tips, I've gone up by one now. I reckon the whole year I've been leading, but that Gippy game was the one that's got me the advantage now. I tipped that upset, but I'm sure, and I put money on it, we'll end in a draw come the end of the season. But we'll touch on the boys' quarterfinals. We're not going to go into too much detail. We're just going to give our tips. We will see three out of four of these games. I'll be in Geelong on Sunday to watch the first and fourth quarterfinals, but we'll start with Sandy and Northern. This is first v the highest ranked loser, which was Northern. Northern only beat Sandy a couple of weeks ago, and it was very convincing. Obviously, different teams, so you have to take that into account. Northern, you talked about without Nat Caddy, is a bit of a different prospect. Not sure if we'll see him in this game. But
we will see him in this game. He was just missing through concussion.
And I said this, GMHBA is a weird one because none of these teams have ever played there. We know the dimensions are a bit odd. And I thought if there's any team this does not favour, it's probably Sandy, because they do get caught, you know, in transition with abused through the corridor, really. That's where they struggle at times. And this is probably the ground you can do it at. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if this will play into, you know, one team's hands better than the other, and if one team will struggle. Sandy should get it done. They should, and they're coming off a really big win. I'd be surprised if they do go down, so I have to say Sandy.
Yeah, they'll be coming in high on confidence, and again, I think it's that top-end talent whose pressure will come to the fore and whose weapons will really really stand out in this one. So Sandy as well.
Second quarter final, Eastern and Oakley. So Oakley moved to the third highest ranked. So this is a really big clash. You wouldn't this is a big clash for a quarter final purely because Oakley finished so low and they're probably not ranked as low as what they did finish in the end. Eastern have blown me away how good they've been, because I was not very optimistic on them sort of in the back end. I thought they just sort of didn't click very well, but they have clicked now. And so have Oakley. This will be real. I think the loser, this is two teams that probably should be featured in a preliminary final, how well they're going. Oh, look, we know some people at Oakley don't like when we tip against them. So I've got to be careful here. You know what, I'll just tip Oakley for the upset in this, because I'm assuming you're going to go with Eastern.
Yeah, I think Oakley obviously have won their last three now. It's the first time they've won back-to-back games all season. So they've really hit their straps at the right time. They've peaked when they've needed to. And they've had, some difficulty when it comes to continuity. They've had a different coach in pre-season. Jason Davenport obviously went up to GWS, and congratulations to him. Paul Griffiths coming in late. They had Tarquin Lockyer coaching them on the weekend. So they've had some difficulty, but clearly they've got the talent there to turn it on. And we saw a lot of them turn it on as well on Sunday. So yeah, it will be interesting, but I think Eastern probably had that flick switch a little bit earlier in the season. It was that loss to Western. I think things sort of changed halfway through the season for them. And I think when they flick that switch, I think they are just a little bit of a better side, and they've just got a little bit more talent on every line. Again, I've talked about it with the girls a little bit, but I think they're less reliant on that top 10 to 12. And I think their bottom 7 or 8 is just that little bit better. So I will go with Eastern.
Yeah, smaller ground as well. This might be a pretty high scoring game in the end, but we'll see how that one turns out. Tassie and Gippsland on the Saturday at 10:30. This is at Highgate in Craigieburn. One you'll be at, Jonty.
Yeah.
Again, this is just sort of the question. Can Gippsland cause another upset? And it's hard to say. I think if you can shut down Tassie's forward line, you give yourself quite a good chance. That's probably the main one, because we know with Ollington in there at the moment with Leake, they've just been dominating inside forward 50. I don't think we'll see McKercher, if sort of what we've read has been right in terms of he won't be featuring. So that's a big loss, which puts more reliance on your likes of Tom Beaumont. So it'll be interesting to see who lines up for Tassie. I'm going to do it again. Gippsland win. Another upset.
Yeah, and I'm going to say Tassie. I just think all the momentum's with them. They've obviously had the week off, and I just, maybe it's a romantic in me, but I'd love to see Tassie go all the way in a season where AFL license this year as well. And just looking forward to seeing what Bo Nash can do in a final. Again, you talk about, some of those better players in the midfield standing up. Tom Beaumont is probably built for finals with the way he is physicality-wise, but Bo Nash is probably that third or fourth player in the engine room. He gets his hands on the ball a lot, so he's one to keep an eye out for as well. And I'd love to see Jordy Payne after that state combine invite has impressed me the last couple of weeks as well, from I've seen and heard. So the Devils will be too good in this one.
Yeah, and then the last quarterfinal, GWV and Geelong, GMHBA. So Geelong get a home final as the away team in a sense, although they don't play at GMHBA, but in terms of the geographical location. But, I mean, obviously I'm tipping GWV. They're my premiership favourites. But, yeah, I guess the ground I'm not as confident now with the type of ground. I just don't know if this will suit one team or the other, or if it will just sort of bring about a different type of game. You'd think GWV have the wood over Geelong, 2-0 this season. They've beaten them twice. Two different teams in both games, to be fair, but they have won twice. Yeah, I mean, GWV should win this, but I wouldn't, this is probably another upset game in terms of it could go either way in the end. But looking forward to this one, but Rebels for me.
Yeah, so am I. I'm looking forward to it as well. I think there's a lot of forwards to keep an eye on. You've talked about River Stevens in this podcast. Tom Anastasopoulos has, performed very well, particularly early in the season. And then GWV, Lockie Charleston's in some Whitehall form. You've got Jonty Fall, who's been performing well as well. So really interesting to see that. But I think that the Rebels will be too strong here as well.
Yeah. Well, then that wraps up a big podcast game. But look, we're going to try and get as much info out with some big games coming up. Next week, we will literally just be reviewing the boys' quarterfinals and the girls' quarterfinals. There are no other extra games from now till the end of the season, as far as we're aware of. So thank you all for watching. Make sure to follow our socials for some extra content, especially the girls' content. We released our Vic Metro and Vic Country analysis videos, which should be on our YouTube channels or coming up very soon. if you listen to this on the Wednesday night. But thank you all for watching. Make sure to follow us, and we'll see you in the next episode.